Okay, can you guys hear me? We can go ahead and get started. First off, I want to congratulate everybody for attending this session. I know there's another BizTalk session going on at the same time here on Platform as a Service. You guys made the right decision, so welcome. I do want to point out to make sure you go and view that session online. It's the introduction to the Platform as a Service EDI offering, which has some cool, exciting stuff. So today's session is on BizTalk Server 2013, running on Windows Azure Infrastructure as a Service. So let's get started. Before I jump into the About Me section, I want to kick off a few scripts here that are going to take a few minutes to run. Now, I thought of long and hard about how to make running PowerShell scripts that run for 20 minutes exciting. I thought of a stand-up comedy routine, but my wife kind of vetoed that. Apparently, she said I wasn't funny. So I'm going to kick off some scripts here and then jump into our presentation. And then when time comes to jump in and see the results of the scripts, we're going to go back and talk through them in more detail. The first script here is going to create various virtual machines, two BizTalks and one SQL, and it's going to automatically join it to our domain. And it's going to join it all created on our virtual network as well. So before I do that, this is BizTalkLive-WE is my virtual network. And I want to show you in here that there are no BizTalk servers or SQL servers attached to this network yet. We just have one primary domain controller that's already configured and running. That's set up there. So I'm going to go ahead and kick off this PowerShell script. And while that is running, I'm going to jump over to another BizTalk domain. And don't worry, I'm going to go through all this in more detail. Jump over to another BizTalk domain and kick off a multi-server BizTalk configuration script. And what this script is going to do is configure our BizTalk environment after we've completed the other script that has created our servers for us. So I'm going to kick that off. And then I'm going to kick off one more script, which is here, which is an automatic configuration script to set up BizTalk 360 and provision a single install of BizTalk server. So I'm going to kick that off. And I simply click configure here. And I'm going to let that run. So while these scripts run, we will get started with our presentation. So a little bit about me. I'm a 9-year BizTalk server / integration server MVP. So I've been around BizTalk server for quite a while now. I run the community site, biztalkgurus.com. And I also run the site, biztalkguru.com. So I have both. One's community, one's personal. I was co-author of a book called Applied Architecture Patterns on the Microsoft Platform. It came out a couple years ago where we kind of walked through some various scenarios of what Microsoft technology is best to use and what scenarios. I'm currently working on my first Pluralsight course, which should come out here in a month or two. It's going to be titled What's New in BizTalk Server 2013. And I'm a community speaker. I like to do these events. I've been in Sweden, and I've been at TechEds before. Has anybody attended one of my sessions in the past? One person? I've been in several presentations for him, so at least you should know he's been to my presentation and decided to come back again. So that should be reassuring for the rest of the talk. Let's get started. I want to talk about A Tale of Two Stevens. Anybody here expecting a talk on AppV, Application Visualizer? If so, you went to the wrong Stephen Thomas's session. So there is, in fact, two Stephen Thomases here at TechEd. There was two of us at TechEd New Orleans as well. That's one of the reasons why everyone has, well, why do I always put the W in my name? I always sign it with the W. Just so happens I ran into multiple occasions where there's more than one Stephen Thomas. And then sometimes it has its privileges. So I was attending a conference in Seattle a couple months ago, called up to the hotel and wanted to use my hotel vouchers for some free nights. And the guy's like, oh yeah, Stephen Thomas, we'll override the capacity controls. You can use your vouchers, no problem. He's like, yeah, I just checked you in. He's like, here's your dry cleaning. And I'm like, oh, that's not me. And he's like, oh. So he had the wrong Stephen Thomas. But luckily, that Stephen Thomas was friendly to the staff, and I got to use my vouchers. Sometimes it's bad to be a Stephen Thomas. Tuesday morning, I got woken up by Stephen Thomas is here, friends, looking for him. I think he may have overslept in the morning. So it can go both ways. So let's take a look at what we're going to cover today. First off, I have a quick primer where we're going to talk about some infrastructure pain points, some of the basics of infrastructure as a service, and then why BizTalk and infrastructure as a service make sense together. Then we're going to look at some development and test scenarios. And then last, we're going to look at some sample scenarios. And the sample scenarios hopefully will give us a better idea of some of the things we can think about in the future of leveraging infrastructure as a service. So let's get started with the primer. So as I talk through these infrastructure pain points, hopefully you look at these and don't recognize any of these. These are pain points that I've collected in my 10 years of consulting. And pretty much I see one or more of these at every client I've been to. The first pain point really relates to resource onboarding. So usually when I'm brought into a project, I'm part of a larger team. And sometimes it's a couple people, three or four. Sometimes it can be as many as 100. And nowadays, these teams are going to be, you know, geographically located across the world. So the one thing I've always seen is the speed at which it takes to onboard a resource varies greatly by company to company. But generally, it's about a day or two after a resource arrives before they can be fully up and running with generally a virtual machine development environment. Now, I have seen some extreme cases where it's taken over a week for the developers to get up and running, in which case they're left idle reviewing documentation and creating their own documentation, which usually wasn't the main purpose for bringing those developers on board. The other thing with resource onboarding is the space needed to actually host the virtual environments for these developers. I was at one client where I had to actually share my virtual machine with somebody on another time zone over in India, which that in and of itself didn't cause problems until, you know, they were saying I undeployed their code in BizTalk, and I said that they didn't, and, you know, sharing a development environment is never a fun experience. And then last, it relates to supporting these development environments. I'm sure none of us have actually done it, but we've all seen somebody go into their virtual machine and accidentally hit shutdown instead of log off. And that generally never happens during the day. It always happens about 9 p.m. at night. Then you have to open up a support ticket and get someone on the infrastructure team to log in. They're always disgruntled because you interrupted them from, you know, playing Xbox, and now they have to restart your virtual machine. So the support of these development environments is always a challenge. When we think about upgrading from, say, BizTalk 2010 to BizTalk 2013, for example, we always have to think about what environment are we going to use to test our existing solution in the new upgraded BizTalk server environment. Generally, that comes at the expense of an existing development environment. Most clients I've been at don't want to spin up a whole new environment for testing the code on the upgraded servers. Generally, they take existing environment and simply do the upgrade to see how the code's going to function. This could cause problems if you have to do a production fix on the existing code before you've completed your migration. Multi-server environments. So we all know it's better to find problems in your code sooner rather than later, but I've rarely been at a client site that has, where every developer has access to a multi-server BizTalk environment. At that same time, I've rarely seen where we've taken code from one developer workstation, promoted it to a multi-server BizTalk environment, and not caught some sort of problem in doing so. Generally, those problems are in the deployment process, the deployment process itself. Something was overlooked that only works on a multi-server environment. But nevertheless, developers having access to a full BizTalk multi-server environment sooner rather than later is always going to be a good thing. Something else is short-lived solutions. Occasionally, when companies merge, there'll be projects that needed to be integrated for a short period of time. So you've purchased another company, you need an integration solution for 3 months, 6 months, something that eventually will go away. The current infrastructure model doesn't really support something not living past several years, especially in the US as they have different tax classifications for purchasing hardware. So short-lived solutions tend to be a challenge. And then bursting scenarios. I know in the US, it's the day after Thanksgiving is the big holiday. In the UK, I believe it's Boxing Day. And in Canada, it's Boxing Day. I'm not sure what's big around here. But how to handle from an infrastructure perspective when you need 3, 4, or 10 times that scale for a short period of time is always a challenge. So let's take a look at what is Windows Azure Infrastructure as a Service. So one of the main goals of Infrastructure as a Service is, frankly, just to make infrastructure easy. So we've exposed it through a portal. We've exposed pieces that developers are used to working with, virtual networks, virtual machines, and we're all about making it easy. It's all about Microsoft's pay-per-use infrastructure offering, which means if I need a server today, I can spin it up. If I don't need that server tomorrow, I can delete it. And I'm only charged for the time at which I use that actual server. I don't have to go through corporate IT and get approval and a budget and a, you know, plan to have this server for 3 months down the road in order to spin it up and do some isolation testing. It has two main key components, and that's the virtual machines, which I think we're all familiar with, and then the virtual networks. The virtual networks are really there to tie virtual machines together inside of Windows Azure. And then with the virtual networks, you can create bridges from your Azure virtual network to your on-premise data centers. And really what this is about is enabling developers to take control over their infrastructure. So with this, developers can create their own virtual machines that in the past would have to go through IT in order to local infrastructure in order to get that done. And it's really about eliminating the I don't have an environment for that. This is one of those questions, one of these statements I hear again and again when I say, well, let's test this out. Let's test out a multi-server deployment. Well, a lot of times I hear, I just don't have an environment for that. So site to infrastructure as a service connectivity options. I'm going to talk about this quickly. We have VPN connectivity options, which allow us to bridge our on-premise data center with our Windows Azure virtual networks. We have point to site, which is very easy to set up. It's a software-based VPN solution. You can set that up in 10 or 15 minutes to allow one computer on your network to connect to your virtual network in Azure. And then there's site-to-site connectivity options. There's a software-based site-to-site connectivity option and a more in-depth hardware router-based solution. Whenever we talk about site-to-site, Microsoft generally says you need to involve IT Pro, which I know I'm not IT Pro, so I've not attempted any sort of site-to-site connectivity. In addition to the VPN options, we also have traditional connectivity options. So we can use the service bus to bridge between Windows Azure and on-premise data centers, as well as other protocols such as SFTP, FTP, and HTTP. Any other way you would communicate with existing trading partners, you could use that to communicate with your Windows Azure BizTalk servers. So why BizTalk and infrastructure as a service? So I consider this one of the biggest wows to BizTalk server in the past 10 years. It's quite simply because up until now, I've only had full control over my application code, which is my orchestrations, my binding files, and I've had very little influence on the infrastructure at which my applications get to run on. And that can sometimes cause a problem because it's hard to convince somebody that I need a multi-server environment. A lot of times they just don't understand the need for that. It's also hard to convince them that I need a UAT environment that at least mirrors in the number of servers to what you have in production, simply so we can test out these complex deployment scenarios. Because deploying BizTalk is definitely more challenging than some of the other like IIS-based scenarios. So with infrastructure as a service, now me as a developer can take control over my own infrastructure. And I can set it up and configure it how I want to use it and enable me to ensure that I have the right application and the right infrastructure for my solution. With Windows Azure infrastructure as a service, we now have some pre-built images, which means we have an evaluation edition, a standard edition, and an enterprise edition already ready for us that we can use. And we'll see that in a demo in just a minute. With this, they've also introduced a new pay-per-hour pricing model, which is something new that we haven't seen in the past. So what this means is if I need a production BizTalk server only between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, for example, I can use Windows Azure to spin that up just during those time intervals and only pay for the BizTalk server for those hours that I need it to actually run. If you went to your local IT and said, I only want to pay for BizTalk 8 hours a day, they probably would laugh in your face because that's just not how their costing model is set up. We also have software mobility, which means if I have BizTalk licenses on-premise, I can take those and move those into Windows Azure and run those on those virtual machines. And then in the past, I've heard some people say that BizTalk was hard. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that just dev test on your MSDN subscription?
I believe the question was about per-minute pricing. Per-minute pricing is across the board, I believe. The pricing discounts is only for MSDN account, but that is an across the board, as far as I know. It'd be per minute, correct. Just like stopping the virtual machines is a across the board change as well. So in the past, people have talked about BizTalk being hard to install. Well, now you can spin up a pre-built image and have BizTalk set up and running in a very short amount of time. In the past, you used to have to allocate at least 8 hours to set up a new BizTalk environment. So let's talk about some development and testing scenarios. So along the same lines of the per-minute billing, there was some recent new announcements that dramatically changes the way we think of infrastructure as a service. First off is the no charge for stopped virtual machines. Prior to this, if you left a virtual machine stopped, you would continue to be charged for the full usage of that virtual machine. Has anybody like me gotten a bill for like $100 and wondered why? Yeah, definitely. I got called into the vice president's office and got yelled at pretty bad for an $80 bill for a large virtual machine. And she just was really coming down on me. And she's like, that's a pair of shoes. And for those of you who know, my wife's the vice president. So she watches those bills. So now I don't have to worry about it anymore. No charge stop VMs. We have the permanent billing. So like you said, I think these are going to be across the board changes that don't apply specifically to MSDN privileges. So we have the permanent billing. And then the free trial has changed a little bit from what it was before. I'm not sure if it's tweaked differently for euros and pounds, but in the US, the free trial is now you get $200 for 1 month, and you can spend it however you want during that month. In the past, it was a 3-month free trial, so it's been cut down to a month. Now, there are some changes that are specific to MSDN users, and they've also switched to a cache model, as opposed to what we had before with X number of units for each individual Azure service. So now we have the cash model. Your first month, you get an extra $50. With that, they announced virtual machine pricing discounts of 33%. And this is only for virtual machines that are created and running under your MSDN subscription. So these have to be under that subscription. Services, I think, are discounted 25%. And all premium disks, this is the big one, which relates specifically to like BizTalk Enterprise, for example. All premium disks that are created under your MSDN subscription are charged at the base VM price, which means a large BizTalk Enterprise, that the street price would be $8 or $9 an hour, would now be 24 cents an hour after your 33% discount. The other big thing was we can now legally use MSDN software on our Windows Azure virtual machines. That's a huge plus. Up until now, it was confusing and challenging. That's all better. And anybody that has an existing MSDN subscription, you can choose to opt out for this new model if you wish for up to 1 year, keep the existing package. Or you can simply log in here, click your button under your subscription, and convert your account right away. Anybody that does nothing is automatically converted August 1st to this new cache-based model. So let's talk a little bit more about some dev and test solutions. So we already talked about pre-built images, which allow us to quickly get up and running with what Microsoft thinks is an ideal BizTalk Evaluation Edition or a BizTalk Enterprise Edition. But we also have the ability to create our own custom images, which allows us to take our enterprise copy of Windows that we use for every server we create on our virtual machine and apply that as an image inside Windows Azure. So a new developer can come in and get our own corporate image and use that to create their own virtual machine. Another thing you can do with this custom images is, if you're like me, the very first thing you do when you install Windows 2012 is install a classic shell, so I can have my start menu back. So now we can create a custom image. So every time I create a new virtual machine that's a base Windows 2012 install, I already have classic shell running on there for me. We have an API for extensions. So if we don't like the Windows Azure Management Portal, we can extend that. Almost everything is accessible via a REST API. And our last demo, we'll take a look at how we can use BizTalk Server, new REST support to help extend this for us. Dev and test, a lot of it's included with MSDN subscriptions. Almost every project I've been on, all the developers are covered under an MSDN license, which now gives them full access to at least some Windows Azure on a monthly basis. And then we talked about before about a lead time coming into a new project of a couple days or up to a week. Now we have to allocate at least 7 minutes if we want to create a new BizTalk environment. So multiple days are now down to 7 minutes. Out of server space, not likely to happen. We're using the global resources of the Windows Azure data centers. So we have more than enough space and capacity than we need. There have been some instances where some data centers won't allow some types of virtual machines to be created there. They're simply out of capacity for that type of resource in that data center. But those are, I believe, data centers that are kind of being decommissioned anyways. I've never had any issues with the core data centers. And then the support for these environments are now done by the developers themselves. So by logging into our Windows Azure Management portal, our developers can now restart those virtual machines if they were to, say, accidentally do a shutdown instead of a restart. So let's take a look at a demo of how we use the management portal to create a virtual machine. I'm sorry, can you say that a little louder? No, this is just developers supporting their own development environment. So, although I have seen cases developers support production, but that's a separate issue. So I'm just going to log back into my Windows Azure management portal here. And to create a new virtual machine, you just click on virtual machines. I'm going to go to new. I'm going to do from gallery. And in the gallery here, if I had my own custom images, those would show up under custom images. You can see here I have two custom images that I've created. If I have disks, a disk is a virtual machine that has already been created using an image, and now it's just sitting there as a disk that I can attach to and use it. It doesn't create a new sysprepped machine off of that. And then we have our platform images. These are Microsoft-supplied images for creating these new environments. We have several for SQL Server. Then we have our three BizTalks, as we talked about. I'm just going to kick off an evaluation one. Then you give the virtual machine name. Now, the virtual machine names need to be globally. Those don't need to be. The username. They used to have everything hard-coded to administrator as a username. Now, supplying a non-administrator username is now required for security reasons. Then the DNS name. The DNS name has to be globally unique across all of Windows Azure, which is why you'll see me put some random numbers generally at the end of it. And I got the green check mark, so that tells me that, yes, in fact, this DNS is available. I can select which storage account, network, virtual network I want to connect to. In this case, I want it to be just a standalone virtual machine. I don't want it to connect to any virtual networks. So I'm just going to throw it into one of these random storage accounts. By changing the storage account, it will limit my options for where I'm going to put that virtual machine in terms of a data center. Your data center and your storage account has to run in the data center that you create the virtual machine in, because obviously you wouldn't want your virtual disk in, you know, Europe and my virtual machine running in the United States. So they enforce that restriction. So I'm just going to click Next. I have the ability to enable remote PowerShell or create an availability set. We're just going to leave that for now. And I click Complete. And this is off provisioning now, right here at the bottom. And now in about 5 to 7 minutes, it'll change from starting provisioning to running, and in which case I can just click Connect and log right into that virtual machine like it is any other BizTalk machine that I might have. The evaluation edition of BizTalk has SQL and BizTalk on the same virtual machine. The standard edition, Enterprise, they're expecting you to be on a domain and bring your own SQL Server on a separate BizTalk box. So that's the difference there. So that was a real quick demo of how to create a virtual machine using the management portal. And we'll see later how we create these same virtual machines using PowerShell. So let's talk for a minute on what is considered the holy grail of a dev and test environment. So I would say the best experience I could hope for is my own isolated domain, where I had my own domain controller, I had my own SQL server, and I had my own multi-server BizTalk box that was only for me to work with. So the reason why this is good is because there's a lot of times where you want to create various user accounts to test least access privileges on making some sort of web service call. You want to test your code where you don't have everybody running as a domain admin or a system admin. But a lot of times, getting these accounts created can be challenging inside the enterprise. Creating new Windows accounts, even for testing purposes, all depends on how they've structured their internal infrastructure and their domains. But I've never seen it be an easy process. Always takes opening a ticket and hours, if not days, before any of those requests are completed. With this type of environment, I could have my own domain that I control. I can create my own user accounts. I can create my own BizTalk project solutions. I can do pretty much anything I want and not have to worry about the corporate IT people really caring what I do with this environment. And what's more important is if I do something really silly, like delete the message box database, which I have gotten calls for developers that have done that before, the developer can recreate this environment themselves. I don't have to go through corporate IT again to get them to reimage or recreate that virtual machine. So how do we get to this holy grail of a multi-server BizTalk environment? So what we really want to get to is a one-click configuration experience. We want to kick off a PowerShell script or some sort of script and come back 45 minutes later and have that environment ready for us. Now, we can do that with using various different tools, and it'll end up being a combination of all these tools to get there. So today, I'm to the point where I can create the whole environment, the domain, BizTalk, SQL, everybody joins the domain. But to actually configure the BizTalk server using the new BizTalk provisioning tool, which we'll talk about in a minute, I still have to log into those BizTalk boxes to do that. So right now, we're at a one click plus about 10 minutes of manual configuration to get to our holy grail. I think very soon, another month or so, we have Microsoft working on it as well, we will be to a true one-click end-to-end deployment process for this. So we can use PowerShell, we can use custom images, we can use a concept called bootstrapping to help us download code at the time that the virtual machine is provisioned, along with remote PowerShell to help us create our environments, and then the BizTalk provisioning tool to help us configure those multi-server BizTalk environments. And the real goal of this is something that's repeatable, that's resizable if we need it, and that's something that's available right now. So that's really what we're trying to get to here. So let's talk a little bit more about this BizTalk provisioning tool. This is installed on all the virtual machines that you create using Windows Azure. So I use the Evaluation Edition. It's going to create a folder called BizTalk Provisioning on the C drive, and that's going to have this new BizTalk Provisioning tool. This is a command line tool, and there's two components to it. There's a service that needs to run on the BizTalk box, and then there's a client tool that needs to run on one of the BizTalk boxes. So the service needs to run on every BizTalk server in your group. Once you start all those services up, you run the client on one of your BizTalk servers to configure your whole group. And this uses a simple XML configuration file. I'll say simple as in a relative term, as compared to importing the BizTalk server configuration file. This is definitely a simpler, streamlined approach to that. It will use this XML configuration file to automatically create your whole BizTalk environment. And this is one of those scripts that I kicked off in the beginning that I said we're going to go back to and look in just a moment. So we'll take a look at what all this looks like in just a second. So that leads us into our demo. So what I'm going to do here is first I'm going to look at the scripts we use to actually create our environment. And then I'm going to take a look at what it takes to use this BizTalk provisioning tool to further build out that environment. So for starters, I'm going to start with PowerShell. Make that a little bit bigger there. Now, this was the script I created when we first started, and you can see here there was no errors when this ran. I'm going to jump over and show you my latest script that creates both the domain controller and the servers, the BizTalk servers and SQL servers. I didn't run this one because this script takes 45 minutes end-to-end to run, and we just didn't have that amount of time here. What this script does at a high level is it creates our virtual machine here, which is going to be our domain controller. And the difference between the domain controller and all the servers that we join to the domain is that this one has to have a loopback adapter for the DNS, as opposed to the other servers when they join this domain. We want to use the DNS of this primary domain controller for its network card, network DNS configuration. So this is using a loopback adapter when it's created. And then obviously there's no code in here to have this virtual machine join the domain because it doesn't exist yet. Now, after this virtual machine is created here, here's where we do some remote PowerShell. And this remote PowerShell work actually creates and configures the whole domain for us. So this is going to install the Active Directory domain service, and it's going to promote this box to be a domain controller. And it's all using these configuration parameters here, which is all listed in a variables file. Everything's pretty self-explanatory. Domain name is like your domain name, and password is going to be, you know, your domain password and your user passwords. But the key here is it's doing all this automatically for us. And then once Active Directory is installed, well, I have it come in here and create all our BizTalk domain users and our domain groups, and then add those users to our domain groups for us. So all that happens automatically. And then I also add our domain admin as a BizTalk server admin as well. So by the time this script is finished, I have a fully set up and configured domain controller with all our BizTalk accounts and users all ready to go. So when this script is done, I would run my next script here, which is going to create my SQL and my two BizTalk boxes. Now, the difference here is when I create the virtual machine, I am passing in the domain to join and the domain username and password. So this virtual machine is going to automatically join the domain when it's provisioned. Now, in addition to joining the domain, I have some different remote PowerShell work that I do here. So here on the BizTalk boxes, the first thing I want to do is I'm going to shut down the firewall. Now, the reason I'm doing this is so I can run the BizTalk provisioning tool without having to worry about any firewall issues. This is local on my domain, so I can do that on here. In an ideal world, I'd want to just open up the port that I needed for that provisioning tool. I just went ahead and disabled the whole firewall just for the sake of the demo purposes. But then on the SQL box, I want to do things a little bit differently. So on the SQL box, I also need to take our domain admin and make him a sysadmin on our SQL server box. And that's so when I run the BizTalk provisioning tool, our domain admin has the correct rights on SQL Server to finish the configuration. So I do that here in PowerShell as well by simply adding the username, the domain user as a sysadmin. So at the end of both of these scripts, I have my full domain set up, configured, all ready to run, except for the BizTalk actually being configured. So that's when I would use my BizTalk configuring tool. So at this point, I would log into my second BizTalk box, start up the service. I would log into my first BizTalk box and start up the service, which I've done here. I've launched, it's under, let's see, the BizTalk provisioning folder. And this is, like I said, on every BizTalk box. You don't want to move any code out of BizTalk underscore provisioning. There's some, I guess, hard-coded values that are associated with this. And then you would simply launch up this service. And then you would simply launch the client like I did at the beginning. And you just launch client and pass in the multi-node configuration file. Now let's take a look at that configuration file. So it looks like this, global configuration data. And here we set up the database name, the features, the host, the servers for the default host, and then our service account details. So it's hopefully it'll make sense to anybody that's configured a BizTalk environment before. Here we simply spell out the SQL Server databases that we want to create. We have to put the fully qualified domain name of the SQL box that we're going to use for this configuration. Under features, we simply have Boolean values to what we want to install on each of those BizTalk boxes. I can either fire up BAM, or I can install the rules engine or B2B simply by changing false to true. And that will run on all those servers in our environment. I have the ability to create multiple hosts right here at the time of provisioning. So most people don't use the BizTalk server application host. Hopefully, everybody uses more than one host. I can use this script to build those out right here when my environment's created. and I can specify which is my default host. And then here I specify all my service accounts. These are going to be the same service accounts that I've created in the PowerShell script that is already listed and already sitting there on my domain controller. And I saw in there it looked like there was a failure. So let's see what happened here. I only got my management database and my SSO database. I think my service crashed on the second box, which is what I saw happen earlier today. So you can watch the recording from TechEd US, where this works beautifully. But it just runs the configuration script. Now, at this point, you could simply back this out. All I would have to do is unconfigure BizTalk on this box, delete my databases, and I could just run it again. And it's just like it's from scratch. Or I could tear down the environment. Oh, yes. That doesn't do that yet. Everything would be assigned to the default host. So you would have to go in and do that automatically. There's other scripts out there that can do that. It's not plugged in right now into this. So that's a good question, though. And they're definitely looking for that kind of feedback for things that you see you need that doesn't exist in here today. So with that, let's get back to our slides. Okay, so let's take a look at some sample scenarios. So what's different now when we take a look at some of these sample scenarios? Well, really what I feel makes it different now than what we had available to us before was this pay per hour licensing model. I think that really opens up a lot more different architectures, different scenarios that we might not have had before. Now, if you have a large BizTalk environment running 200 messages a second, this probably isn't going to pertain to you. But I have seen some smaller shops where they really do. They need BizTalk, they leverage BizTalk, but they don't need, you know, multiple BizTalk servers running 24/7 to accomplish what they need. I've been at multiple clients where they just really BizTalk's a 9-to-5 kind of processing engine. While users are on site, doing things, BizTalk is working. So we now have the pay-per-hour model that can help us, maybe build different solutions, better solutions, cheaper solutions for some clients. We also have our license mobility, which means maybe we have a BizTalk server that we're not using to its full potential in our data center. We can now take that license, put it in the cloud, maybe put it in a data center that's closer to customers to allow them to have a better experience integrating with our system. And we also have an easy scale-out process in the cloud. So if we want to add more RAM, we want to up our CPUs, that's very easy to do in Windows Azure. We can just log into our portal and change that. Does a restart, 3 minutes later, we're running with something bigger. A lot of times, again, this is a multi-day effort to get that same thing done on-premise. And then we have our geographic locations. Windows Azure runs all throughout the world. I can deploy to Europe just as easily as I can deploy to the US. A lot of times, clients will have to deal with multiple vendors when they want to have data centers in multiple locations. Now with Windows Azure, it is a seamless experience across all the data centers. And then another thing is that this isn't going to be for every solution. As we think of some of these sample scenarios, it might pertain to you, but there's going to be 75% of cases that aren't going to be ready for what infrastructure as a service has to offer right now. So let's talk a little bit more about low utilization scenarios. And this could be something that's only needed during work hours, so when your users are running, your users are on site, you want your BizTalk to be running. Also, could be like a short-lived solution. So we're buying a new company. We want to integrate with their software package until we take it down. 6 months down the road, how do we do that? How do we have infrastructure that's just going to live for 6 months? And then costing. A few times I've been on projects where we have multi-tenant environments, and they want to have tenant A totally separate from tenant B from a costing perspective. Now with infrastructure as a service, we can very easily know on a monthly basis what it's going to cost to run that environment. And then compliance issues. There could be times where your code for solution A physically can't run on the same box as your code for server B or solution B because of compliance, permissions, who knows. Now with infrastructure as a service, we can easily spin up multiple BizTalk groups to handle any type of compliance issues. So what are these architectures going to look like? Option one is just simply our domain controller, a BizTalk and SQL. Option two is we might even have it all running on one box. So these are both ways that we could approach a low utilization scenario. From a costing perspective, the pay per hour is probably going to be your best solution in these low utilization scenarios. I think a standard edition BizTalk for production use is $2 or $3 an hour, something like that. Where if you look at what it takes to get on board with BizTalk Standard, even after you provision all your infrastructure, it's definitely going to cost you more than a few dollars an hour initially to get running with it. Also give you a good chance to maybe help sell BizTalk for your enterprise. If everyone's like, well, we want BizTalk, we don't know what it can do, the pay-per-hour model is definitely good for that. You can upgrade and downgrade your hardware with a three-minute outage, so we can just simply, on a single box scenario, we need more throughput, we can change it to a large VM instead of a small VM or a medium VM very quickly. And then we can also very easily schedule the whole environment to be shut down, so we're not charged for it anymore. You can schedule all that via PowerShell, bring it back up in the morning, very straightforward. So hybrid is a big theme here. There's a whole session, I think, on BizTalk hybrid solutions. Doesn't always mean a direct connection, which is something I want to kind of make sure people can think about. Sometimes it can be the service bus or FTP or HTTP that's going to connect your cloud to your on-premise. But we also have the options of the VPN-based solutions available to us. This could allow us to bring our endpoints closer to our customers. So we do a lot of business in Asia, but now we can put a BizTalk server in Asia for our customers to communicate with, then use the service bus to bring that data back to us. Another option might be for disaster recovery. We want to use our BizTalk in the cloud in the event that our BizTalk on-premise ceases to function for whatever reason. And what are these architectures going to look like? We would have our option one, which is going to be our existing BizTalk on-premise. And we can spin up BizTalk servers in Asia and Europe to help facilitate integration with those customers, and then use the service bus to bring those messages back into us on our on-premise BizTalk server. Likewise, we could use BizTalk and SQL log shipping to ship our logs off to our remote BizTalk server running in Azure in the event that we need to recover for them. From a costing perspective, we have the pay-per-hour model, which is going to be probably the best for this. The log files, we can simply move them up to an Azure storage and then use them if we need them to recover from a BizTalk disaster, a BizTalk failure. And then another thing we can do is that we can set up these virtual machines for the disaster recovery scenario. We can set up these virtual machines, install our code on them, and then simply stop those virtual machines. So they're essentially there, ready for us to go with just simply starting the machine and then importing and bringing up the logs. So the last one is going to be bursting and unlimited scale scenarios. So the options you have here are definitely going to be better if you can get site-to-site connectivity. So the more connectivity, the more direct connectivity between BizTalk running in Azure and BizTalk running on-premise, the more options you're going to have. The pay-per-hour model is going to be best for this. It allows you to get extra capacity when you need it for a short amount of time. And then, just like we talked about before, you could set up these BizTalk servers, you could fully configure them and then stop them, and then only turn them on when you're going to need it. We can overflow messages to Windows Azure, which means when your on-premise system can't process all those messages, you could send them to Azure, either service bus queues or other types of load balancing, HTTP requests, however you need to get those messages to Windows Azure. Now, this is an example architecture of what it would look like if we're using Azure for a failover scenario or a burst scenario. I had the, I guess you would call it the privilege to work at a large electronic retailer the day after Thanksgiving. My wife wasn't too thrilled about it, but I got to work in their data center, and I got to watch the BizTalk server go from 8 messages a second up to 120 messages a second and sustain that rate for 8-10 hours. Now, that was a scenario that it took us a team of about 5 or 6 people 3 weeks before that day to get the infrastructure and solution prepared for that event. So that cost a lot of time. Obviously, you could argue, do you always want to scale your infrastructure to handle these types of bursting scenarios? In that specific scenario, BizTalk was essentially pulling messages off of a SQL queue, which would lend itself very good to exposing additional BizTalk processing through the cloud, through a service bus endpoint. This would have been an excellent example of exactly following this architecture, that we could have used infrastructure as a service in a much more cost-effective manner than what it took 6 resources over 3 weeks to develop. So we can have work group 1, work group 2, and we can add an unlimited number of independent work groups to process messages off our work queue. So costing model and something like this, you definitely want to look at the per hour usage for this. We could use our PowerShell scripts to even automatically configure new work groups to process the load if we needed them. Use site-to-site connectivity. That's going to be your best bet for pulling data off of some sort of internal processing queue. Best with queuing, because with the queuing, we have the ability to maybe have a small hiccup for half a second when we spin up a new environment. And so let's take a look at another demo. We talked before about how we can extend using the REST APIs. I didn't really know the best place to put it, this demo, but I wanted to make sure I showed it. So I plugged it in here at the end of the sample scenarios. And what we're going to use the new BizTalk REST adapter and use the REST adapter to do our integration, our communication with Windows Azure, so that our users don't need to know anything about the backend experience. So Microsoft has went through a lot of work to make the Windows Azure Management Portal pretty easy to use. But there's times where you might not want individual developers to have the certificates and the privileges to log into the Windows Azure Management Portal. But you still want them to be able to create a new virtual machine. So let me jump over to BizTalk Box. So I've configured a BizTalk environment with the management certificate for Windows Azure, and I've set up my subscription ID on my send port. And what I've done is I've exposed a REST endpoint for an orchestration. The orchestration is going to then have all the logic needed to create a new virtual machine, and then the user will be able to know, be able to log into that virtual machine. So from a receive perspective, I'm exposed a REST endpoint. Now, I'm not going to go too much into what the REST adapter does, but I've exposed a query string parameter here called base name, which the user can simply provide a base name that they want to use to create that virtual machine. This is all that the user would need to know. They don't need to know anything about Azure. Today we might create it in Azure. Tomorrow we might create it in Amazon. User doesn't even need to know that. They just put in a base name, and they're going to get back credential information for a virtual machine. Then from a SEM port perspective, here's where I have all my subscription information. And then security information, here's where I have my certificate that's going to authenticate my REST requests against the Windows Azure Management Portal. And then I created my BizTalk orchestration here that then walks through the steps required to create a new virtual machine. Now, these are the exact same steps and process that PowerShell does when I use PowerShell to create the virtual machine, but this time I'm using the REST APIs. REST APIs are a little bit easier to work with, I would say, than the PowerShell scripts. Configuring the PowerShell scripts initially is always the challenge. Downloading your publishing file and having a way to scale that if you want multiple developers to interact with it is definitely a challenge. So now using BizTalk as your single point of contact with the Windows Azure Management Portal, I can abstract all of the authentication against Windows Azure from the user. And this simply walks through creating the affinity group, the storage account, the service, and then the virtual machine. And then at the end of this, you could simply return to the user their logon information, their credentials, and their password, and they could go ahead and log into that virtual machine. Now, this takes 10 or 15 minutes to run, so I won't actually run it. But this, I just wanted to give you an idea of how you could extend the management portal if you wanted to add additional functionality to your enterprise. So as we start to wrap up the stuff I'm going to talk about, I want to go through some IaaS tips and tricks. So I've probably created and destroyed well over 500 virtual machines now. I think I got to be approaching 1,000. Simply in the way, my main goal has been how to create and recreate these environments using PowerShell. So I churn through them pretty quick. So as we already saw, if you don't like the portal, use the APIs. I've also created a Windows form tool that allows you to copy VHDs from one account to another. And the tool also would take your virtual machines offline before they introduce the stopped virtual machine no charge feature. So if you don't like anything the portal does, you can create your own. I take great pride in being a drag and drop developer. It was a sad day when I finally sat down and said I have to learn PowerShell. So now I have to script something. I can't drag and drop it anymore. So I bit the bullet and learned some PowerShell basics. Another thing to point out is that the disks are only charged for your actual usage of the disk. So while you might provision a new VM with a 127 gigabyte OS disk, if you're only using 20 gigs of that, you're only charged for 20 gigs, which is nice. And then some properties can't be changed once the artifact is in use. So this relates specifically to virtual machines. So if you don't create your point-to-site VPN connectivity right away when you create the virtual machine, once you start adding machines to it, you can't edit those properties. So I know the Azure team is working on making those properties editable, but generally you need to put some thought into what you need to do when you create these new environments to make sure that it covers everything at the beginning. So with that, I'm going to jump over to Savannah Kumar with BizTalk 360, and he's going to talk about using BizTalk 360 in infrastructure as a service.
Hello, everybody. My name is Saravana Kumar, and I'm one of the MVPs for BizTalk Server since 2007, and I'm the founder of BizTalk 360. So the original idea for BizTalk 360 is mainly focused on the on-premise infrastructure. So once you have a BizTalk environment on-premise, once your application gets to production, there are a lot of operational challenges giving read-only access to your support people, giving limited access to certain applications in your BizTalk environment, and when it comes to monitoring, how you can monitor it easily. So there are a lot of operational challenges are taken care by BizTalk 360. So today I'm not going to go into detail about what BizTalk 360 does, since in the interest of the presentation, we're just going to show how you can take advantage of BizTalk 360 in the Windows Azure IIS model. So these are the core features of BizTalk 360. So as I mentioned, you can give one of the core benefits is if you wanted to support your BizTalk infrastructure without BizTalk people, then you can do it with BizTalk 360. And it provides governance auditing functionality. If somebody starts something or stops something, it's all audited, and you can go back and check it. And also, we provided a much, much better security model. If you look at the way the BizTalk applications are supported, people need to have access to 7 or 8 different tools, SQL Management Studio, BizTalk Admin Console, Performance Monitor, Message Box Viewer, BAM Portal, ESB Portal, etc. So we consolidate everything and bring it into one single application. And also, we provide the ability to share environment. Once you have something like a platform like BizTalk, you wanted to make most out of it by providing the platform to multiple business units. So you can do that in BizTalk 360. And the final point is around monitoring. It's very easy to configure monitoring. Say you wanted to monitor whether your receive location is started or orchestration is running, the disk is with the correct disk space, all those kind of things. So the end goal is basically you need to provide one single tool for your operations. So once your application gets to production, how you can improve your efficiency. So it's 2-year-old product now, and it's used primarily on a lot of the on-premise BizTalk environment. But with the cloud, there is a unique challenge now. Steven was showing a lot of demos. How are you going to get to those boxes? You need to provide all your developers with RDP access. That's the way you can get to those boxes. If somebody wants to start a receive location or a stop a host instance or whatever operation you are doing on the cloud VMs, so the only way you can do it now is through the RDP connection, which is not practical. Once you start to scale up and you added a lot of VMs. And even during our demos, we exchanged emails with the URL, username, password, with RDP access, all those kind of things. So in the future, you may want to eliminate all those things. With the BizTalk 360, what it does is it provides you it's a full capability of BizTalk 360 in the cloud is the very first thing. And it gives you a web access to your environment. So you don't need to RDP into those boxes. You can just open up a browser, put the URL, and then you can access it. And you can do the full operation. Whatever you wanted to do in those boxes, you can do it through the web interface. And there's no need to provide RDP access. That's a big win for, like, if you have a lot of developers and you have a lot of VMs, then that process can become messy. So I'm just going to switch over to the demo machine. If you remember in the beginning, Steven just kicked off this single line script. So we recently introduced something called BizTalk 360 EC installer for cloud. So all you need to do is, there is a blog post. If you search it, you will find it. So all you need to do is open a brand new virtual machine which you created through the portal, and open PowerShell, and you just enter this one line. And it will automatically download this tool, and you just need to click configure. So this is what Steven did at the beginning of his talk. And automatically, it will provision everything. It will configure BizTalk, and then it finally it opens up BizTalk 360. So you're ready to evaluate it within like 10 minutes. So we just wanted to make this experience as easy as possible. Okay, and so once it's done, you can access it basically from outside. So this is like before we provisioned the machine, and you can see it's asking for username password now. Okay, is it the right one? This is the correct domain? Or? So once it's configured, like all you need to. So we're having some username access problem, but the idea is like once it's provisioned, like you can access it outside, and it you should be able to completely operate your environment from a browser. And even if you've got multi-server environments and you open up the right SQL ports, you should be able to manage all your BizTalk environment in the cloud. Here you go. I can't remember the passwords.
I set it up.
Yeah. So once it's done, so all you need is a browser, and then you just log into that box, and then using the web browser, you just monitor it. So that's all I have to talk. We'll just go to the final thing.
Okay. So really what this hopefully shows you is that you can extend pretty much anything you can think of into this Windows Azure infrastructure as a service. Just how we saw BizTalk 360 extend automatic one-click installation of his product. It also does configuration of BizTalk on that single BizTalk environment. Very easy to do to extend this into infrastructure as a service. So as we think about other ways that we can use this, maybe at night at 3 a.m. when you do your nightly build, you automatically configure PowerShell scripts, kick off creating a new BizTalk test domain. That test domain also installs all your BizTalk code, runs all your unit tests, emails you a report of those unit tests. If everything is successful, automatically delete those virtual machines for you. So you can think of all the different ways you can use this infrastructure as a service. And I think as it matures and we see more and more use of BizTalk and greater site-to-site connectivity, we'll see more use of this and be more excited by it down the road. So hopefully what we saw here is that infrastructure as a service is easy. Using the management portal, very easy to create new virtual machines. Using PowerShell, once you understand what all the parameters are, very easy to repeatedly create your BizTalk environments. We saw that this is a good solution right now for our dev and test. I do all my development now on Windows Azure Virtual Machines. So it's definitely ready to jump right in there. And hopefully through the sample scenarios, we saw that there may be new possibilities down the road on how to leverage this in some of our production scenarios. That's a slide from last TechEd. So is there any questions? Yes.
Have you been using SAP adapters or
So the question is SAP adapters or Oracle adapters. I've not done any of those specifically in infrastructure as a service. Everything there behaves exactly as it does on-premise. It's just going to be a matter of, do you have connectivity to those environments? Correct. The issue you're going to have, and some of the things that they're working through, is how do we handle latency issues between a BizTalk running in the cloud and connectivity you might need to make to, say, a database on-premise, which is why we didn't talk about, you know, I have joining a BizTalk and IaaS with my on-premise BizTalk in the same group. Definitely going to have latency issues right now with stuff like that. So, any other questions? No? Okay. So as you saw in the beginning, my email is just me@biztalkguru.com. So feel free to email me with any questions. I'm going to put these scripts on biztalkgurus.com very soon. I'm still working on cleaning them up a bit. Really like us to get to the full one-click experience before I release them. But thank you guys for attending, and make sure you check out the PaaS session on the recording.
Thank you.